Well, have you ever noticed that love can make you do some really crazy things? Have you ever noticed that before? I was only a month into my studies in seminary. But when really I first connected with my wife, Mandy, it was one of those things where I had followed the call of God to go to this little town of Wilmore, Kentucky to study for ministry. I had never even heard of that place. I didn't know what went on there. I didn't know what it was like, but I knew God said, go there and I want to prepare you for something. I want to prepare you for ministry. And so I packed everything that I had, which wasn't much at that time, and moved from Suwanee, Georgia here all the way to Wilmore, Kentucky. Now the problem was Mandy was living here in Suwanee. And so it made absolute no sense to me, you know, in the grand scheme of things, like, God, why in the world did you wait until I moved 6.5 hours away from the girl of my dreams until we finally connected? That's not exactly the way I had it scripted out. It wasn't exactly the way you're supposed to start a relationship. But remember, love makes you do some really crazy things. And I remember, for me, we started dating, and I was really quickly head over heels for her. And husbands, we get the bug. I know you've been there before. You get it. And I was so head over heels for her that really nothing was going to keep me from going and seeing her. 6.5 hours, no big deal. There was no distance. There was no schedule. There was nothing that was going to keep me from traveling to see her. And so I did. Almost every single weekend while I was in school there, which was 3 years. And so I would travel 6.5 hours one way and 6.5 hours back. And there was many times when some of my classmates would start to have kind of like a come to Jesus meeting with me, you know, an intervention like, hey, bro, we need to talk about this. You're driving most of your weekend. Maybe you should like stay here a little bit longer. Or do you realize how much money you're having to spend on gas? But I didn't care. There was nothing that was going to keep me from getting to her. Because love can make you do some really, really crazy things. And it's worth any cost for me to be with her. Now, the reason I tell you that is because today we're in the second week of our series on Hosea. And Hosea is a book in the Bible in the Old Testament that really talks about the crazy things that God is willing to do in order to bring us into a closer relationship with him. There's no barrier. There's no obstacle. You're going to see in just a minute what God is willing to do in order to show you how much he loves you, but in order to win us into a relationship with him. Last week, we saw how Hosea, God comes to Hosea, who is a prophet, the prophet to the northern kingdom of Israel. And God comes to the prophet Hosea and he says, look, I don't want to just tell my people how much I love them. I want to use your life and your story to communicate something really powerfully. I wanted them to see it in living color and to know that they know that they know that they've experienced the love of God by what I'm about to do in a relationship in your life. And so Hosea's like, okay, what do you want me to do, God? And it's one of those things where you have to know about Israel. Israel and God's relationship that really what God's trying to communicate. Israel had this pattern in their relationship with God that was very similar to a pattern that happens so many times in our lives. And really, it's this pattern we showed you last week, where we really, in our lives, we start off with a season at the top of peace in our lives. Where things are going well, usually because we've been connected to God and things are going good. But just like us, Israel got distracted in their relationship with God. And so inevitably, they'd start saying, God, I guess we're doing pretty good. I'll take it from here. And so they would go from a season of peace to they would basically disobey God. They would basically turn their back on God, a period of sin. When they turned their back on God. And in the middle of that, they'd start to see, uh-oh, things were much better when we were in connection with God. We had peace in our life. What are we going to do? When they break covenant with God. And then God, every single time, God would pursue his people. And God would do it in so many different ways. Many times God would send a prophet like Hosea to basically say, communicate to my people how much I desire a relationship with them and how much I desire them to turn from where they're going to turn to me. And as God pursues his people and God pursues us, it would lead the Israelites into a period where they would repent. They would basically say, God, we really messed up and we need this connection with you. And inevitably, they would experience peace in their life again. And the same thing has happened over and over and over, hundreds, thousands of times for Israel, for the people of Israel, and really thousands of times in our lives. And as God looks at this, God basically says to Hosea, here's what I want you to do, to communicate to them that I love you more than this. I love you with so many second chances. I want to show you how much I love you and how much it pains me that when you walk away from me. And here's what he says to do. Hosea chapter 1, verse 2 in the New Living Translation. This is what we read last week. He says this: when the Lord first began speaking to Hosea, to Israel, through Hosea, he said to him, "Go and marry a prostitute." What? Did y'all know that was in the Bible? "So that some of her children will be conceived in prostitution." It says this: "This will illustrate how Israel has acted like a prostitute by turning against the Lord and worshiping other gods." That's crazy stuff. That may be a new thing for you in the Bible. What in the world is God asking his man, a prophet, to do in order to communicate his love for us? See, what God's trying to say is this: Israel, I want to show you how much it pains me. And I mean, when you read something like that, it's almost like a gasp moment. When you saw that, where you're like, are we going to read that in church? Anybody like that? You can be honest, you know. It's one of those things where the audience who's hearing this in Hosea and seeing this call is supposed to say, oh, no, he didn't. No, he wouldn't. And God is trying to say, you know what? That's the way you've turned your back on me. It's the same kind of way. But God's also trying to show his people of what he's willing to do in order to be united with us again. And so Hosea does it. He follows the call of God. And imagine the conversations going on with all of his, the people in a religious circle. God told you to do what? Right. You know, just think about that. And so he does it. He goes basically into the brothel and he finds him a wife and he marries a girl named Gomer. And if you have to pick out a wife in that situation, why do you pick a girl named Gomer? You know, kind of an interesting thing there. But the reality is, he goes to Gomer and knowing her track record, knowing where she'd been, knowing probably with her track record what she would do in the future. And he follows the call of God and says, I'm going to marry her. And he does. He marries her. And when he does, it's one of those things where Israel, for Gomer, this would have completely redeemed everything in her life. She would have gone from a girl that basically had a scarlet letter on her chest her entire life, where she would go into the streets and everybody would say, oh, that's that girl. That's that one. She went from this woman with a crazy tainted past to a person with a huge bright future, all because Hosea was restoring this relationship and giving her hope. But shortly after they've already said their vows at the altar. He liked it. He put a ring on it. Everything's done. They're married up. And wouldn't you know it, Gomer all of a sudden breaks the marriage covenant and she aims her love toward other men. And so I want you to check out how God responds, how Hosea responds, and how God responds when we turn away from him. And it's found in Hosea chapter 2, starting with verse 2. Here's what it says. And he's saying this to the kids, but here's what he says: rebuke your mother, rebuke her, for she is not my wife, and I am not her husband. Now, what he's trying to say here is she's broken the covenant. She's gone off to other people. And here's what he continues. It says this: let her remove the adulterous look from her face and the unfaithfulness from between her breasts. In other words, he is so frustrated. He's so discouraged and disappointed. He put everything, it's almost like he put all the chips to the table in this relationship. And it's like, okay, God, if this is what you're calling me to do, I'll do it. He marries her, and wouldn't you know it, history repeats itself. Now talk about following the call of God in that kind of situation. What a crazy, crazy thing. And so he's frustrated and hurt and disappointed. And talk about this raw deal for Hosea. God told him, I want you to go and marry somebody in this line of work. And then she turns around and turns to other people. And what God is doing, God has basically told him to do this. And when you think about this, think about all the guys, all the men that were friends with Hosea. They were probably having an intervention with him too. They were probably saying, dude, we told you. I mean, you knew what you were marrying into. We told you it was going to be like this. And sure enough, here she is. And what God is trying to say is this: don't you see, guys? This isn't just a story of Gomer and Hosea's and their marriage. What God is trying to say is put down the stone, put down the rock that you're trying to hurl and the insults you're trying to hurl toward this girl. And what I want you to do instead of that is I want you to pick up instead a mirror. And I want you to realize that this story isn't just a story about Gomer and Hosea, and they were real people and they really did this. But I want you to realize that this is your story and this is my story. Because this is what God is willing to do, to show us how much he loves us. That when we've turned our back on God, when we've walked our own way, and we all have done that, and Israel did it over and over, that God says, I love you so much that I'm willing to marry you. I'm willing to do anything to get into, to come into relationship with you. And so as we look at this, we realize this isn't just their story. This is our story as well. And so here's the reality of what's happening. We look at this and we say, well, God, how have I done this in my life? How have I turned to other things in my life and worshiped them instead of you? And the truth is we do it all the time. We do it sometimes in our careers. When we elevate our careers to a place, and really that becomes the title or status becomes our everything. We do it sometimes with our kids. We love our kids and we want what's best for them, but sometimes we do it with our kids when we drive them to a perfection that they can't obtain in order to make us look better. It's a prestige thing. I'm wanting to have a facade, right? And sometimes we do this with our financial security. When our finances become the main goal of our life, we do it with our social image and our pursuit of power and popularity. The reality is, when anything in our life becomes our everything, God is saying, it's like you've done the same thing Israel did with me. That's what God is saying here. And Hosea is saying, is saying to Gomer, look, I've loved you and I've given everything that I've got to you. I have put all the chips to the table. And you ran away searching for love in all the wrong places. Y'all have heard that song, right? Searching for love in all the wrong places. When in reality, I was standing here. True love was waiting right here the whole time. This is the story of what we do in our lives. But this is also a story God is willing to do to show us how much he loves you. Have you ever loved somebody that didn't love you back? It hurts. And this is what's happening with God. See, we see here that God is disappointed and discouraged and frustrated and all these different things, that he's thrown his love to his people Israel and they've turned their back on him over and over and over. And it hurts God so many times when we go to so many empty wells in our lives thinking that they can fill us. The places that leave us empty when God, the fountain of living water, is waiting there to fill us up and to pour into our lives. God is like, come on, follow me. My way's better. If you've had, one of my favorite movies of all time is Bruce Almighty. Have y'all ever seen that? Bruce Almighty. It's Jim Carrey, who is hysterical. Jim Carrey plays Bruce. And Bruce is this guy who got the fortunate or maybe unfortunate privilege of getting to be God for a little bit. He had this conversation with God. Basically, God, I think I can do your job better. And God in this movie basically says, okay, I'll give you my powers. And he lets him actually be God. Thank God God doesn't do that to us. You know, I would mess things up. But the reality is, so many times what would happen is he had all sorts of powers when he became God. He actually he was trying to impress his wife, and so he actually took a lasso and pulled the moon closer just to impress her. He used his powers for all different things, like people were trying to were praying and he couldn't figure out how to answer their prayer requests, and so he sorted them in an email and replied all yes. You know, he had all these funny ways that he all these powers that he couldn't do, but because he was God, he got to do it. But there was one thing that Bruce found that even God didn't have the power to do. Check it out.
Wait! How do you feel now?
Have you completely lost your mind? What, are you drunk?
Yeah, I'm drunk. Drunk with power. Love me.
I did.
If only it worked that way, right? Love me, you know, love me. But and this is, no matter how hard Bruce tried, he couldn't make someone fall in love with him. And the funny thing is God is saying this to Israel. Israel, I love you so much, but I'm not going to make you fall in love with you. I'm not going to manipulate you and control you to do so. In fact, when God created all of us, he gave us the freedom to choose. God didn't create us as a bunch of puppets or robots that he, as a puppeteer, controls every move and manipulates everything that we do. Now, some of you may say, oh, if we didn't mess up, our lives would be good. If we didn't sin in our lives, things would be great. God, maybe you should take away our free will and just do it for me. And God didn't want to create people like that because even though we would follow him, it wouldn't truly be love, would it? If God made us do everything, we wouldn't really be loving him back. See, God gave you freedom. He is sovereign, but he gives up some of his sovereignty. He gives up his gives you freedom so that you can choose whether to love him or whether to not. And there's a chance we could walk away in the other direction and follow other things. But in giving us the ability to choose, it gives us the ultimate ability for to give glory to God. Not to be a bunch of robots, but for God to love us so much and for us to choose out of our own volition to say, God, you are awesome and I love you more than anything. I love you back. And if you're a parent, if you have kids or grandkids or, you know, teenage, all sorts of things, you know that there's nothing better than when your kids choose out of their own on their own volition as you've loved them and poured into them that they want to love you back. There's nothing better than that. And it's the same thing with God. God pours into us and he gives us that ability so that we can love him back. And so here God is standing basically like a groom with flowers in the hand trying to say, I'm not going to manipulate you into loving me, but I'm going to woo you. I'm going to do everything that I can to win you over so that you will see how great I am, how much I love you, and you'll turn to love me in return. So I want you to check out what God does. There's all sorts of things that God does to help us to get connected to him, to woo us into a relationship with him. And we see one of those things in verses 6 and 7. Check it out. Here's what it says. It says, therefore, God, this is Hosea saying about his wife, therefore, I will block her path with thorn bushes. I will wall her in so that she cannot find her way. She will chase after her lovers, but not catch them. She will look for them, but not find them. Then she will say, I will go back to my husband as at first, for then I was better off than now. This is kind of like the grass is always greener scenario. It's basically saying, look, what God is wanting to do is this. Sometimes God is willing to block our paths in order to allow us to experience what he wants us to do. For instance, sometimes we're going off in our relationship with God. Sometimes we're walking our own way and God sees, uh-oh, this is not going to be good for them. They're about to do something in their life that isn't good for them, or they're about to do something that's going to walk away from me. And sometimes God will do something to put a hedge of protection around your life, something that you didn't even know was going to be there, but God is protecting you from something, from either drifting further away from him or doing something that's going to harm you. And God will sometimes block our path in order to protect us. And it's one of those things where sometimes in our lives we look at God and we're like, God, I mean, why is this door closing? I mean, I thought this was the right thing. Why is this door closing? Sometimes God wants us to kick down doors. He wants us to keep praying and keep going. But sometimes God is putting a hedge of protection around your life in order to say, I don't want you to go over here. Because I want to keep you in the boundaries here so that you can be drawn closer to me. And so you don't do anything in your life that's going to harm you. And so I want you to check out the second thing God's willing to do to lead us closer to him. It says in verse 8 and 9. It says, she has not acknowledged that I was the one who gave her the grain, the new wine and oil, who lavished on her the silver and gold, which they use for Baal. That's the false god. It says, therefore, I will take my grain. I will take away my grain when it ripens and my new wine when it is ready. I will take back my wool and my linen intended to cover her naked body. In other words, what he's saying is this. Sometimes God is willing to withhold provisions in order to lead us closer to him. Sometimes God's willing to withhold provisions. For instance, sometimes when we're continuing to turn away from the Lord in our lives, God will actually allow us to experience the result of what it's like to be disconnected from him in the way we're running. Sometimes God will let us experience that. And for Israel, God was the one who had provided for them. God had blessed them. God had done so many things in their lives. And they took that blessing that God had poured in their lives and they started saying, well, we're going to take that and we're going to worship other gods instead. And God is like, come on. It's me the whole time. And so God is saying, I'm willing to even take away some of those provisions in order to draw you into closer relationship with me, so that you know when the source is cut off, that you'll be reminded that I'm the source and you'll draw closer to me. So sometimes God is willing to withhold provisions in order to lead us closer to him. The third thing we see is in Hosea chapter 2, verse 14 through 17. Here's what it says. It says this. Therefore, it is funny because they're about to experience, it's like there's all these things that are going bad. There's all these things you don't deserve. And here's what the Lord says. Therefore, I am now going to allure her. I will lead her into the wilderness and speak tenderly to her. Well, that's not what she deserves, is it? It says, verse 15, there I will give her back her vineyards and will make the valley of Achor, that's the desert, a door of hope. There she will respond, as in the days of her youth, as in the day she came up out of Egypt. In that day, declares the Lord, you will call me my husband. You will no longer call me my slave. I will remove the names of the Baals from her lips. No longer will their names be invoked. In other words, what I'm going to do is I'm going to work to woo her in so many different ways in order to lead her closer to me. Here's the third thing God's willing to do. Sometimes God is willing to strip away distractions in our life. Sometimes God's willing to strip away distractions in our life so that we can better see the Lord. In fact, I want you to notice that God says that he's going to move his people or lead them into the desert. Why? It's not to punish them. It's because in the desert where there's nothing going on, all the distractions that's keeping them from a relationship with him, all of a sudden it's removed and they can start to hear God more clearly. And so I want you to check out what God does finally, his promise for his people. Here's what it says, verse 19 through 20 and verse 23. It says this. God says, I will betroth or marry you to me forever. I will betroth you in righteousness and justice. In love and compassion, I will betroth you in faithfulness, and you will acknowledge the Lord. Verse 23, I will plant her for myself in the land. I will show my love to the one I called, not my loved one. I will say to those called, not my people, you are my people. And they will say, you are my God. See, someday I'm going to work to woo her. I'm going to work. This is basically Hosea saying, even though she turned her back on me, even though the marriage covenant is broken, I'm going to do whatever it takes in order to win my wife back. And this is the picture of what God is willing to do for you and for me. That God is saying, all the stuff that you've done, I see this. All the time we've repeated this circle over and over and over. I love you too much to leave you where you are. I'm still coming after you. I'm still coming after a relationship with you, and I'm still going to love you beyond belief. And the thing is that as he's waiting for this, is a picture of God saying and knowing everything that we've done, I'm still proposing to have a relationship with you. See, the truth is, I don't know all the ins and outs of your story and your life. Next week, we're going to finish up this series on Hosea. You won't want to miss next week. Crazy thing is going to happen. But I don't know all the ins and outs of your story, and I don't know all the ways that where you've turned to other sources and other places to fill you up. I don't know all those things, but I do know that no matter how far we've run from God, we have a God. This is a picture of a God who runs back to us. No matter how distant we feel, we have a God that runs to us, a God that wants a relationship with us. And so as we come to the table to celebrate communion, to celebrate what God has done in our lives and through our lives and what God can do, I want to ask you as during that time to maybe take some time to reflect and ask yourself this question. Where in my life am I drifting from the Lord? Where in my life am I maybe turning to something else to fill me up instead of relying on the Lord? See, the reality is as we come to the table, we realize that we all, just like God in Israel, we all have a broken covenant with God, that we've broken covenant. And as we come to the table, this is a picture of God running back to you. God's extending his arms of grace and saying, I don't care where you've been. I know what you've done, but I still invite you to be my own. Come home and receive my grace.